At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with John Tamney, the author of the new book, The Money Confusion, How Illiteracy About Currencies and Inflation Sets the Stage for the Crypto Revolution. We're headed to crypto, but we're going to stop at the way station called inflation. John, right now, inflation is a headline story around the world. All economies, European, Asian, African, everybody's pointing to inflation as a threat to their prosperity, to their sovereignty, to stability. Easy money is the blame, easy money of the central bankers for these years. You disagree, John. You say the source of inflation is what, John? What is the source of inflation?
The source of inflation is the lockdowns. And how we know that is we can go back to first principles. We can go back to Adam Smith's pin factory. What happened when one man producing one pin per day, divided up work with several on the way to tens of thousands of pins per day. Work divided is the path toward explosions of production. The iPhone is a consequence of global cooperation among workers. In 2020, workers around the world who had built up sophisticated working relationships with one another over decades were suddenly barred from going to work, suddenly barred from operating their business. That prices are higher today is, to me, a statement of the obvious. When you eviscerate the cooperation, production of everything's going to be more expensive after the fact. But command and control is not inflation. Inflation is a devaluation of the currency. We are suffering the bitter fruits of command and control. And it staggers me that so many would mistake this for something entirely different, which is inflation.
You write that devaluation is a policy choice. Translate that, John.
It is a policy choice. It's what governments do. They can de-link their currency from gold, as we did in 1971. People can have differing views about gold, but what they cannot deny that in delinking it, that was an explicit devaluation, a shrinking of the currency. It'd be the equivalent of Bureau of Weights and Measures shrinking the foot from 12 inches to 3 inches. That's what we did to the dollar. We explicitly shrunk the dollar. In Germany after World War I, they gradually shrunk the value of the mark. This isn't caused by too much money. In fact, what's shrunken, what's devalued, increasingly is not circulated at all. The definition of inflation is not only being perverted today, but the understanding of inflation is 100% backwards.
Let's speak of two examples in the 20th century, both malign, one worse than the other. I'll start with China. John very carefully explicates why it was that two families, the Sassoons and the Kaduris, emigrated to China and established banks that were prosperous, eventually moving on to Hong Kong. One is now known as HSBC. Why did they go from Baghdad, where they were well-established an international cosmopolitan state in the, I think, 18th century, 19th century? Why did they go to China? Because that was where prosperity lived. They were offering credit to a country that needed it. They were valuing the currency. And then, John, this is the most wonderful part of your book. Maoist revolution didn't start with Mao. It started with a currency. In other words, the conditions for the tyranny were in place when he participated in the student revolts of the early 1920s. How so, John?
Well, first thing, okay, isn't it fascinating that the two families most associated with Chinese prosperity in the 20th century, the Kaduris and the Sassoons, they were Iraqi Jews who did not speak a word of Chinese, but they brought credit to China because that's where a lot of talent was. And so it's a reminder that central banks can't trample on reality. Where there's talent, credit will always find it. But then China suddenly wasn't prosperous. Suddenly all the talent, as you brought up, moved to Hong Kong. The Kaduris moved their talents to Hong Kong, and that's where the credit moved to. But what happened in China to bring this on? Well, the Chinese currency plummeted from roughly 12 to a dollar all the way to something low, less than a millionth of a dollar, as in the Chinese currency was made worthless such that it ceased circulating. And in so doing, in destroying the currency, Chinese officials destroyed trust in capitalism, thus giving Mao the talking points he needed to bring the country to where to the tragedy that it became. Devaluation first, which is the inflation, and then the rise of demagogues who will take advantage of the destruction of money, which is the destruction of savings and wealth.
I said there were two Milan examples. The other is also equally severe. It happened to Europe. Now, what is striking here is modern monetary theory, the Austrian school, and the supply siders. John scoops all in one basket and says, and points a finger. Okay, John, I'll go with modern monetary theory, which is you can never run out of money. What's wrong with that opinion?
What's wrong with that opinion is that money can't be produced. Money is the consequence of production. Wherever there's production, there's always going to be money to move it around. You don't need a government for that. Modern monetary theory puts the money, the paper first, and then presumes production. No, that gets things backwards.
What we're looking at is the destruction of Europe. Note that the currency falls before the tyrants rise. Note that.
I'll
look at other examples, John. I haven't yet investigated what happened to the Roman Empire, but I'm beginning to guess that it was the devaluation or the degradation of their ability to use a currency.
Yes, they clipped coins too. And Germany in the 20th century was this prosperous country. And then suddenly the mark went into free fall all the way to 1/4 billionth of a dollar. Now, what's important about this is most would say, oh, yeah, they flooded the economy with marks. No. Money that's destroyed ceases circulating. And that it does is a statement of the obvious. No one's going to bring out goods and services from behind the cash register for money that doesn't exchange for equal amounts. And so what's got to be stressed is that there's the devaluation of the currency and then the excess money. There's this myth that too much money chasing too few goods causes inflation. That presumes a level of information asymmetry that doesn't exist. No one accepts debased money and hands over real goods and services. Devaluation first, inflation first, then the printing of the money.
In 1974, Gerald Ford, then president, because of the resignation of Richard Nixon, and then into 1975 and 76, the re-election where Mr. Ford failed, he came forward with something called a win button. This is an artifact of the 20th century. Whip inflation now. If you have a win button, it's a collector's item. However, this is an example of what happens when governments, sovereignties, believe that they can solve inflation with boosterism. John, the devaluation of the dollar is a driver for instability everywhere. Is it also true for the U.S.?
Yes, it's because the dollar is the U.S. currency, but it's also the world's currency. So when you destabilize it, you destabilize global economy. I mean, think about it right now. If you and I were to be dropped into Pyongyang right now, or Tehran, or Venezuela, or Caracas, we had better have dollars if we want to actually get real goods and services, because that is the currency of choice in those countries. And so when you destabilize the dollar, you destabilize exchange around the world. And in the 1970s, a dollar that had formerly been defined in terms of something stable, 1/35th of an ounce of gold, suddenly wasn't. And it went into free fall. The delinking from gold was the inflation. That was the devaluation. The excess money circulating was the consequence of the inflation, as in money that wasn't trusted as much anymore ceased to circulate to reflect that it wasn't needed, it wasn't useful in its devalued state.
And you make the distinction of real inflation. Nothing the Federal Reserve can do, did, ever would affect real inflation. And I believe, John, it's George W. Bush who started his term with gold pegged at $271 an hour, an ounce. I believe I'm reading this correctly. And he left his term at $871. I remember, John, because we talked in those days, the Bear Stearns failure, and then the Lehman's failure, all of that year of 2008. I remember the Sunday night of Lehman's failure before the markets opened on Monday morning. I accidentally looked at the price of gold. These early days of the internet, we didn't all have mobile all the time. You had to depend upon hardwire and just a few news services. And the price of gold was $725 an ounce when Lehman's news hit in New York. Now it's something like $1,800, $1,900. I don't know what it is. But that's real inflation. Explain that, John.
Yeah, because gold doesn't move. That's why it's always been used as money. When you see the gold price in dollars move, you're seeing the value of the dollar move. And so we've seen a dollar that bought 1/270th of an ounce of gold in the beginning of the 21st century. It now buys roughly 1/1650th. That is the inflation. Higher prices can be the consequence of that inflation. But to say that higher prices are inflation, as Democrats and Republicans are saying now, is like saying that wet sidewalks cause rain. It's reversing causation. The devaluation of the currency comes first, and this is important because in the last 2 years, we've seen the dollar rise against the pound, euro, yen, yuan, Aussie dollar, Canadian dollar. We've also seen it rise against gold. So if this is inflation, as the consensus says, this is the first inflation in the history of mankind in which the currency rose, which should have people questioning what they're referring to as inflation.
But John, there are economists who say the devaluation of the dollar means that people buy more of our goods. Are they wrong?
They're 100% wrong. A dollar is a measure. It's nothing more. So this notion that who buys what has anything to do with the dollar's value mistakes what money is. Money is just a measure, and this is important consideration of what we're going through right now. Let's, instead of Adam Smith, let's look at Henry Ford. Why was Henry Ford so able to put a car into the hands of so many people for whom it was formerly an impossible to get luxury? Ford's insight was work divided leads to exponentially more production. Let's extrapolate this to the world. In 2020, the prices that prevailed before the lockdowns were born of immense globally sophisticated production, people working together in trillions of different ways. Then the lockdowns eviscerated what took decades to build. Is it any surprise the prices are higher amid this degradation of what was so incredibly sophisticated? I hope it's not a surprise, but that's not inflation. And it raises the question, if it was inflation, why are we blaming why is it high around the world? Well, when you break up cooperation, of course prices will be higher. Only thing is that's not inflation.
Quickly, John, why do we trust the Swiss franc? 9 million people without an army or a nuclear weapon.
We trust the Swiss franc because it's the policy of the Swiss bank to maintain a stable currency, and that's why the Swiss franc is used globally.
John Tamney is author of the new book, The Money Confusion: How Illiteracy About Currencies and Inflation Sets the Stage for the Crypto Revolution, and we're headed to crypto. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at Remarkable.com today.
This podcast is sponsored by IQBar. Your favorite clean, functional, delicious nutrition brand is raising the bar with a little help from Thomas Keller, Michelin star chef of the French Laundry. IQBar and Thomas Keller have teamed up to create a salted caramel chip protein bar and yuzu mango hydration mix. With toasted macadamia nuts, rich caramel flavor, and brain-boosting nutrients, this bar is like having a Michelin star meal in your pocket. Pair it with the taste bud tingling yuzu mango IQ Mix hydration mix, packed with magnesium and adaptogens to improve clarity and mood. With Keller's culinary excellence and IQ Bar's commitment to great taste and clean ingredients, this limited edition collaboration is simply mwah. And the best part is that 10% of sales go directly to Chef Keller's nonprofit, Mentor, that supports aspiring young chefs. Great taste, great nutrition, great mission. Go to IQBar.com today and enter promo code KELLER20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products plus free shipping. That's IQBAR.com, promo code KELLER20.